Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Happy Friday. Had a great conversation this morning about the debt ceiling vote with Congressman Juan Ciscomani, Republican from Southern Arizona. Now, a lot of his Republican colleagues in the Arizona delegation voted no on the debt ceiling bill, but Congressman Ciscomani voted yes, and he explained why he voted yes and some of the things moving forward. So we're going to walk through a little bit of this. It did clear the Senate, goes to the president's desk, so it looks like we've averted a shutdown, which I didn't think there was ever going to be a shutdown. I am concerned about what happens next, but I thought something needed to get done. I thought the Republicans got a lot of what they could expect to get, but the congressman echoed a lot of things I've been saying on the show, which are if in the current climate, in the current makeup of the House, the Senate, and the presidency, Republicans have to be mindful of what's available for them to have. So he talked about the problems in Washington and the need to fix them.
Washington has had a spending addiction for a long time. It's given us inflation. It's given us high interest rates. Cost of living is high. These are the things that we were there to tackle and do it responsibly.
So, you know, the old Reaganism, where Reagan said, you know, we don't have high inflation because the people are living too well. We have high inflation because the government's living too well. And the congressman's right about that. So what are the wins from the mind again? From the mindset of a Republican, why did he vote for this? What are the wins that are in this agreement?
We are spending less next year than we are spending this year. There are no new taxes, no new government programs. And the obvious win here is that we didn't do a clean lift of the debt ceiling. The last nine times the debt ceiling had been raised, had been just clean under Republican and Democrat presidents and Congresses. So this is the first time that happened in the last nine times. And also, we avoided default, and our veterans are getting taken care of, and so are our seniors.
Another person that is being credited or blamed, depending on where you stand on this, for brokering this and being kind of an intermediary in this is Senator Sinema. Senator Sinema played a key role in this in the Senate trying to get this passed. There were genuine concerns, which Congressman Ciscomani acknowledged, you know, on defense spending. That's defense spending increases by 4%, which isn't nearly enough. We are watching. And this is the part of it that makes sense. You know, when I was a kid, you know, before you understand politics, you see things in a bumper sticker or you see things on a T-shirt and they're funny or they make sense. But when you get older, you realize what a heavy political statement they are. There was an old thing, and it's probably still around, because we used to have bake sales at our school to raise money for stuff. And there was an old bumper sticker that said, I can't wait for the day where the schools are fully funded and the Defense Department has to have a bake sale to buy bombs. And, you know, it is such a childish mindset that everything we have is because of national defense. Peace through strength works. It works in your home. It works in your business. It works in your state police and your local jurisdictions. It works with the federal government. The primary jobs, and this is where when we teach kids government, and when we have these conversations with our kids, we complain because we have years of experience in our complaining over the things that upset us build on top of each other. But at its core, you know, I've said to my kids many times, and by the way, my kids don't agree with me on everything, but what I would say to them is, you know, the government, just like a parent, just like an employee or an employer, they have primary responsibilities. And if you're a business owner, you can tell a lot about that business by how they prioritize what their what those primary things are. And for the federal government, and I this is not necessarily orders 1 through 3, but the primary responsibilities of the federal government, number one is national defense. We have got to have a strong military that is capable of defending itself against any enemy. We also have to have strong borders. We have to have secure borders, and that's the federal government's job as well. And the other is infrastructure, the roads and the bridges and the electrical grid and the things that the government, those three things are the primary responsibility of the federal government. Everything else comes after those three in my perfect world. That's what I believe about the government. They have primary responsibilities. So for the people that are saying national defense, sure, you're going to decrease spending, so we are going to spend money on the military. Yeah, we are. The Chinese are trying to destroy us from the inside out. They're trying to do it economically like we did to the Russians. If you remember, we won the Cold War because of our economy, not a shot fired. The Chinese are trying to do that. They're aligning themselves with other nations militarily, but economically, you look at the future. Our president, this government, is pushing our nation at a rapid speed toward what they call renewable sources of energy, wind and solar and battery operated vehicles. Well, where are you going to get? Where are you going to get the minerals needed to build those things? The answer is you're going to pull them out of the ground. Well, where do most of the rights for those key minerals own? Where are they? Who owns them? The Chinese. So here we are in the world of fossil fuels, where the OPEC nations basically control the price of a barrel of oil and the output and production. And here we are going to go into the next generation and hand it off to the Chinese, who, by the way, has got great business dealings with the Saudis and the OPEC nations. Oh, what about Afghanistan, a very mineral-rich nation? We're out. The Chinese are in. So there's a lot more to this national defense thing than meets the eye. You've got the Chinese that has the Russians, the North Koreans, the Iranians, possibly India as well. And do we have the capability of defending ourselves if one of those rogue nations decides they want to pick a real fight? That is the priority. That is the number one responsibility of our federal government. So it does need to be increased. That is a need, but that's the issue. These are the things we should be wrestling with, and we're not. Instead, it's just pile more money in. Nobody gets told no. And I'll give you one more thing from the congressman before we move on. We're going to talk more about it later because there's so much more to hear. But he also said now that we've gotten this deal done, it's just beginning, because now we negotiate on appropriations, and he's the only one on the Appropriations Committee.
This bill that we passed this week gives the framework and the top line of the spending, but how much of it we spend and where it goes will be up to the appropriations process. And I'm the only member from Arizona on the Appropriations Committee, so I'll be carrying the voice of my constituents, of course, and also Arizona in terms of where we need to be fiscally responsible, which is going to be all across the board by funding defense, funding our veterans, and rescinding COVID unused money and so on. So these are the things that we're going to be still battling in appropriations.
So it's not over. There's more to be done. And then they've got to take this message on the road. They've got to talk to the American people and convince them that the agenda. And again, as a Republican, and if you're not Republican, you still can at least understand on your side of the aisle, you're going to try to do the opposite in convincing the American people. But the Republicans are going to have to go out there and convince the American people that more Republicans in the Senate and a majority there and the White House are the direction we need to rein in spending. Chuck Schumer is already out on the stump. Chuck Schumer said on behalf of the Democrats that they did everything they could to eliminate the worst parts of what Republicans wanted to do that were going to hurt so many people, and got the best deal they could. Republicans are going to be on the opposite side of that coin, taking their message to the people. Coming up in a moment, more examples of people defending themselves and why. We'll get to it in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
All right, appreciate it. As always, happy Friday. This lawlessness that we are seeing an increase, we're seeing a dramatic increase in violent crime, and I believe it is a direct response to two things. There's probably more than that, but two main things. One of them is the defund the police movement. We are seeing criminals emboldened, believing that going after cops is okay, that people hate the police as much as they hate the police, and that they are turned into cult heroes, and they, in the court of public opinions, they are good people for doing bad things to the police. And the other part of this has to be weak-willed prosecutors that in the name of some kind of equity are not prosecuting cases and they are not punishing people that have committed crimes. So I'm going to give you a couple of examples of the byproducts and what's happening. First, when it comes to crime, an immigrant store owner. Now, this is a guy named Zaid from it has a store in San Francisco. He's an immigrant to the United States from Afghanistan. It says that he was at his wit's end after a gang of thieves stole more than $100,000 in merchandise from his tobacco shop. Here's a quote from the store owner. The politicians need to get a grip on this because it's worse than Afghanistan or Iraq. At least in Afghanistan, the Taliban will cut your hand off and people are afraid to commit such crime. Adding that he sees people stealing at nearby stores every day. Said they know the police won't do anything. Adding that the thieves were in his store for 18 to 20 minutes, had plenty of time to ransack the place. He added that the police have told him that they are shorthanded. So the defund the police movement and a direct correlation to the increase in crime. Here's one that's a lot scarier. In Arkansas, an armed pregnant woman shoots attacker targeting her family in a parking garage. I talked yesterday about guns being an equalizer. I don't relish and take joy in people getting shot. But what I do look at this and say, if you are going to have a conversation, a real conversation about firearms, you have to have a well-rounded conversation. And there are dangerous people that shouldn't have guns that do, and they shouldn't be allowed to. And we should be figuring out how to stop them. But taking them away from the hands or making it harder for people to get them. Now, this mother, I don't know her economic situation, but when you make all of these rules and licensing and registration and classes and you have to do this and you have to pay a fee, what you do is you take out a segment of our society of lower income people that can't afford it. You look at what's going on with our economy right now, and there are people that are having a hard time putting food on the table. And interestingly enough, many of those people, because of their economic situation, live in higher crime areas. And you're making it unaffordable for those people to defend themselves, defend their property, and defend their families. And you can argue with me till the cows come home about that, but that's what these things do. I say this often to kind of give you my position in life. I live alone now. My kids are gone. They have kids of their own that they have to worry about. So I only have to pay for me. And so if you tack a fee onto me or you make me do this or I have to jump through that hoop, it's not right. It's not fair. But I can still, it still won't change the outcome for me. I'm still going to get the firearm. But what about a single mom? What about a mom that has a family and she's in a parking garage? These are real questions that people should ask. Are you saying it should be harder for that woman to defend her family? Because the equalizer in this was the firearm. So the firearm in and of itself isn't dangerous and it isn't bad. A firearm is a tool that is used. It's like a fire extinguisher, except the fire extinguisher always has a good purpose. It always puts out a fire. Well, I mean, unless you hit somebody over the head with it. But the purpose of a fire extinguisher, just because I have a gun doesn't mean I'm looking for trouble. And there are people out there that believe it. You see somebody armed, you won't see me armed. I carry any firearm I have concealed. But there are people that have a firearm on their hip that you can see. And you automatically think they're looking for trouble. And I would tell you, those are usually the most peaceful people out there. The last thing they want is trouble, which is why they want you to see that they are armed. If you are thinking about having some kind of a disagreement or robbing them, you're probably going to think twice if you see a gun on their hip. Those are the people that are truly looking for peace most of the time. The anti-gun movement is founded in ignorance for the most part. Here's another one. Hands-off Walgreens debuts the anti-theft store, just two aisles of touchable products. So now when you go into a Walgreens in these stores where they're doing this, out of necessity, because they've been robbed so many times, that when you go into these Walgreens stores, you go to a kiosk and you order the things you want. And then you go to the cash register and it's boxed up for you or bagged up for you. And you buy your items at the cash register and you get them handed to you after you pay for them. You are seeing retailers, major retailers, that are doing this because they are being robbed and shoplifted to such a degree. This is the outcome. This is what people are doing to defend themselves. Walgreens is getting, they are making it less and less of a customer-friendly environment out of necessity. You think they want to do this? Do you think they want to have their employees bagging up the items that you wanted? Do you think they want to keep all of their stupid items behind the behind glass and behind a shelf so that you punch it in a kiosk and then they go and collect your things and bring them to the cash register? They're doing this because they're being robbed blind. The other option is they close their stores in those areas. You got an Afghan refugee that says this is worse than Afghanistan or Iraq and said at least the Taliban cuts their hand off. They're afraid to commit these crimes. He had criminals in his store ransacking his store for 20 minutes. It is something we all must consider. We have to think about it. In a moment, Governor Hobbs limits growth in Phoenix suburbs because of the water supply. We're going to talk about what this could mean and where it is going to be impacted because it isn't the big urban areas. We'll talk about it next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, Governor Hobbs making an announcement yesterday of pausing some construction projects, residential construction projects in the far east and the far west valleys. It's going to have implications, although not direct implications, with growth within the major cities. So I'm going to let you hear a little bit of what she had to say. Why is she doing this? Why is it important? What are they doing about the future? Let's start with about what they're doing here.
As required by law, we will pause approvals of new assured water supply determinations that rely on pumping groundwater, ensuring that we don't add to any future deficit. This pause will not affect growth within any of our major cities where robust water portfolios have been proven to cover current and future demands. I cannot emphasize that enough.
I would say probably in those East Valley and West Valley cities, your home values just got higher, but it's going to be expensive, more expensive, and usually the suburbs far out at the edges of town, as they call it, is where home prices are usually cheaper. It's a lot more expensive downtown. The Arcadia area of Phoenix, the central corridor, those large grown-in parts of the town that people love so much are expensive about location, location, location. Proximity, yes, to Camelback Mountain for Arcadia, but it's also proximity to the freeway and downtown, and all of that plays a role in it. So when you go west, my oldest purchased a home 6 years ago, I believe it was, or maybe a little bit longer than that, in Buckeye. And she did it that long ago because she was able to get a much bigger house for a lot less money. It was way out in that time. It was considered way out in Buckeye. And so how will this affect home values for those people looking for startup homes that are willing to go out to Queen Creek, out to Santan Valley, out to Buckeye? What will it do to those home prices if they're not going to have these neighborhoods going in and it's going to be difficult because you can't give, you can't show the 100 years of water, that they can't have the projects? What does that mean? And then what does it mean in town? I would venture to guess that land developers right now in Arizona are considering, and maybe I'm just completely wrong and overreacting, but I would think that developers in the Phoenix area, wherever you are in these major cities that aren't affected, if you can find an empty piece of land, they're grabbing it up, or if you already own it, you're making your plan to build apartments there or condominiums there. You know, you are going to start seeing a lot more of this happening because there really is nowhere else to go. But what is it going to do to traffic in those dense populated areas? I just mentioned the Arcadia neighborhood. If you look, I've talked about this quite often. If you drive on 32nd Street from McDowell or Thomas north until it dead ends at Lincoln, the projects that are going in, beautiful projects, by the way, apartment complexes and really upscale apartments are going in. You look on 44th Street, the same thing. You are seeing this huge growth, but what they're doing is they're building up. There's really not much room to build out. So are we going to start seeing those major projects away from Sky Harbor Airport, whether you're going to start seeing these massive apartment complexes? But what's it going to do to the traffic? I'm wondering what traffic in the Arcadia area is going to be like in 10 years. You can't really widen the roads. There's nowhere for them to go on those major thoroughfares there. They're not going to make them much wider. how this is going to have an effect. Now, again, the water problem is our problem, but we've done a great job with this. Our neighbors around us, where we all were gathering water, and we still do gather water out of the Colorado River, with the drop in the water in the river, we've had to negotiate some other things. Well, Arizona, and this is maybe something I'm sure they have been saying it, but it seems odd to me that our neighbors in California, the ones that are the environmentalist experts, the ones that preach to everybody about climate change and conservation and all this other stuff, and here we are in, you know, old country boy bumpkin Arizona, and we've been doing the yeoman's work on this. We have been storing water properly. We have been treating water and conserving water and doing everything we can to conserve every drop of water we can, and yet our neighbors that are the environmentalists that preach environmentalism are just now trying to play catch up out of necessity. I think this is something that everyone should be looking at. So I want you to hear this. I didn't play this earlier, but this is Governor Hobbs talking about the importance of doing this right now.
If we do nothing, we could face a 4% shortfall in groundwater supplies over the next 100 years. We have to close this gap and find efficiencies for our water use, manage our aquifers wisely, and increase our utilization of renewable supplies.
So my other question about this, are there ideological differences here? When you hear 4% over 100 years, there are a lot of people saying, I don't understand why we're doing this because of 4% over 100 years. So what we're going to do is we're going to reach out to those people that are knowledgeable on the topic, and we're going to ask them what that really means. How are we in this much danger? Because it's not going to pause industrial growth. But how it hurts businesses and growth is expense when in certain industries. And if they don't have affordable housing for their employees, it's hard for them to commit to building a business. Recently, this largest investment in a battery manufacturing plant, I think, in North America is happening in Queen Creek. Well, now we're finding out that some of the planned housing developments out there that aren't permitted yet are no longer going to happen. What are they going to do with all those people? And what does it do to the existing home values? I wish I owned a home in Queen Creek right now. I wish I had a house out there. Because right now, you were just told these big neighborhoods aren't coming in and people are going to need homes. And I wish I had a house out there. It would be a great time to be a homeowner in one of those areas. But in all seriousness, to the people out there that are struggling to figure out what are we doing with interest rates and home values are still very high, inflation is through the roof, how are we ever going to afford the American dream of home ownership? I understand if we don't have water, having a house doesn't matter. But that 4%, how big of a difference will that 4% make over the next 100 years? And what are the things that can happen between now and then that reverses this? That's the other question, and I'm anxious to hear how the governor responds to that. What are the triggers that have to happen so that this law and so these holdups are these pauses are pulled back? So there's a lot of questions we're going to be asking over the next couple of weeks and months, and we're going to get answers so that the people here in Arizona have reasonable responses to them. What we're going to do in a moment is we're going to shift topics to the border. It seems like more and more over and over we are seeing governors that are not border states sending troops to the southern border. I've got a couple of new governors just today that, or at least yesterday, within the last 24 hours, have said they will be sending their troops, their National Guard troops, to the borders of Arizona or Texas, mostly in Texas. We'll talk about that coming up here in just a couple of moments.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Appreciate you spending some time here. We've got a list of some things. GOP governors sending National Guard troops to the southern border that are not border states. Adding two more to the list, Governor Noem of South Dakota. And Governor Sanders, Huckabee Sanders from Arkansas, will now be sending troops to the southern border. This is becoming a national problem as every state is now becoming a border state. How will this end? End of Title 42 changes the way migrants calculate when they'll come and how they'll come to this country. But that doesn't mean they're not coming. When you look at what's happening, here's an example. This is the fallout of this. Work stoppages, rallies support a day without immigrants in protest of DeSantis' law. I'm going to take you way back. I'm going to take you in the Wayback Machine for a moment. This is going back to the mid-90s here in Arizona, maybe a little bit later, but not much. Early 2000s, especially. There was a movement in Arizona of illegal immigrants. And back it was so and again, I'm not somebody that wants to be insulting in the verbiage I use, you know, and I understand there's a style book, but people that are in the country illegally, can we just be there and realize I'm not denigrating anybody by using that word or that phrase. But the movement was this, the same kind of a movement. You need us, and these are not my words, by the way. I'm going to tell you what they were saying. This was the movement's words. We're going to march in Phoenix. We're going to show you how big and strong we are as a group of people that are in this country illegally, and no one is going to be there to cook your food, clean your hotel rooms, cut your grass. Not my words. That's not me stereotyping anyone. That is what was being said during this movement. And there was a lot of the pushback came from the community that said, you've been accepted. We understand now. Now you move forward to where we are now in 2023. And what happened years ago during the Obama administration with the Dream Act, that at the time there were a lot of families that were in this country that were not here legally that were embraced and accepted in the community. There's no doubt that was happening. Well, when this pushback happened, when they started protesting, when people started saying we're demanding our rights, there was a big pushback from some Americans that said, what rights? You're in the country illegally. We have accepted you in here, but don't start making demands. And the battle lines were drawn. I'm not blaming either side. I'm telling you that's what was happening. And instead of us having a reasonable relationship, as has always gone on, people are on opposite sides of the street. But it was a movement on both sides. I understand why people in Florida are saying, and I'm not talking about the people that are in the country illegally. I'm talking about the business owners that are saying, you are going to kill our livelihood. Because in Florida, those people that are protesting are picking the crops that you and I will eat. I've seen it with my own eyes. I've been there. This is an area where I can tell you I probably know a lot more about this than you do. And I'm talking to a lot of fellow Americans. I've seen it with my own eyes. I've seen how industrious and hardworking people are and what they're willing to do to feed their families. I think it's commendable. But I also understand Governor DeSantis and the Florida legislature saying something has got to be done with the incentives and what we're doing to incentivize people to come here. Do you realize that, and we'll maybe get into this later on about one of the things in the debt ceiling, is that we are going to see the repayments of student loans start again. And we can have that discussion. But backdrop that with this. In the state of Minnesota legislature is going to give free college to people in the country illegally. Now, I'm a states' rights person, and I think that Minnesota has absolutely every right to do that if they want to. They're incentivizing people going to Minnesota that are in the country illegally. You may think that's a benefit. A lot of people may think it, but I'm saying the incentives to breaking the law and doing the wrong things. I would much rather solve this problem in a positive way for everyone. But what you're seeing is you're seeing governors, whether they're sending troops to the border and they're not a border state, or they're making laws about people being hired that are undocumented, you're seeing them react to the failures of the federal government. You may not agree with what they're doing. I don't agree with giving people free college. I don't agree with that. But it's a reaction. That's their reaction to what's happening here. You've got the mayor of New York. You've got the mayor of Chicago. You've got other mayors that are not Republican by any stretch of the imagination that are complaining about the failures of the federal government. How do you get angry with Ron DeSantis and the Republicans in Florida when they are reacting to a situation A, they didn't create, and B, they cannot fix? That's my biggest question in this. The failures are in Washington, D.C. I think it starts in the White House with policies and enforcement of existing laws. That falls solely and squarely on the shoulders of the American president. Enforcement and policies on existing laws. But after that, we have to have a congressional delegation that's willing to get together and make reasonable changes to legislation that's going to stop incentivizing people coming across the border, stop enriching the cartels, and it's going to make it a safer process. I am also someone that, as much as I am adamantly and vehemently against illegal immigration, I am just as adamantly in favor of legal immigration and a robust system. So those people that are sneaking into the country and working illegally in the fields in Florida, the fields in Arizona out in Yuma, and all these other jobs that they are doing should have a legal means to come to this country to continue to do that work. But they are rightfully in the United States. They're paying taxes. They are not living in the shadows. It benefits everyone, and it cuts out the cartels. The cartels are no longer the arbiters of who comes and who doesn't. They are not the ones that control the southern border of the United States any longer. I mean, if there's anybody out there that thinks I'm being unreasonable, I'd love to hear where. We stop illegal immigration. We make it so that people that want to come here and work in the benefit of the American economy do that work that Americans are not and will not do, that they have an opportunity to work, to make money to feed their families, pay taxes to the American government, live above board, not in the shadows, which means they're not preyed upon as often because they're afraid to tell the police that something happened to them because they're afraid of deportation. They can live a little bit more free and safe. But that's on the Congress. Enforcement of existing laws squarely on the president and the policies he's enacted with the people in charge. New legislation that fixes this problem has got to start in Congress. And you and I have to start raising our voices to doing it. I think that's the only way it ever gets fixed. What we're going to do in the 11 o'clock hour, we are going to talk about the economy, the new payroll numbers that far exceeded predictions. What does it really mean? You'll hear a little bit of my conversation with Kristen Bentz. We'll do Did You Hear This for the last time this week. And then we're going to talk about my conversation with Juan Ciscomani, the congressman from Southern Arizona, and the debt ceiling. It's all coming up in the final hour. Stick around.